This is the Media Freak Podcast, the latest, greatest, and newest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs, we're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Ahoy, hoy.
Buki from Wavemaker.
What up?
And Charlie from Show Heroes.
Hello.
In today's episode, we discuss the slippery slope towards more junk food ad bans and our new feature, our Media Freak of the Week.
Woo! This...
Oh, wow, okay. Woo-woo. Thank you, Jack.
I'm excited.
We haven't announced the location yet. Then you'll have a bigger woo-woo.
Okay, all right.
So this week's podcast...
Where are we?
Yes, all right, I'm getting to that. Thank you. This week's podcast comes from News UK. The home of established media brands like The Sun, The Times, TalkSport, and you guessed it, it's Virgin Radio.
Whoa. And whose studio are we in right now?
Well, Harriet? We are recording this podcast from the very studio that Chris Evans hosts his breakfast show in every single day.
Wow.
Does
big time.
Chris now?
Yeah. I feel like I'm embodying him.
You look just like him.
Very good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, yes, huge thanks to our friends at News UK for hosting us. But first, news roundup. In CTV news, the CTV landscape continues to shift as hardware manufacturers such as Roku are accepting losses on devices. Roku is not only a hardware manufacturer offering a range of devices, but it is also an ad-supported channel where revenue is actually quite lucrative. Roku is reportedly due to generate $5 billion of revenue by 2029, which includes income from FAST. Does anyone know what FAST stands for?
Free ad-supported streaming television.
Oh, you're so clever.
That was terrifying.
Well done, okay. Well done. CTV and third-party inventory. Samsung is also anticipated to see significant growth. So according to trade press articles, the CTV market is due to grow to $13.5 billion in 2029. So how do we feel about that, gang?
So it's unsurprising. I mean, the CTV growth is inevitable. I actually saw Paul Gubbins posted something. He was at Advertising Week this week or last week, and there was an out-of-home ad from the trade desk, which is riffing off an old Chinese proverb, and it said, "Dear marketing execs, the best time to invest in CTV was 10 years ago, and the second best time is now." I thought it was pretty nice. But we did a Show Heroes that did a study with Kinesso recently, and 86% of those users that we surveyed watched CTV in some form already, and the vast majority of those who didn't are considering it. But in terms of Roku and the sort of model they're going for now, it makes sense, right? Like CTV is an increasingly competitive market. So at the moment, they've gone for a sort of a razor and the blades model of loss leading on the hardware. They're losing money on the hardware, which is the razor, and they're making up for it the costs on complementary goods, aka the blades, and in this case, it's the advertising revenue. So there's another company who are doing a similar thing, or there are a few, but Vizio is doing something similar. Samsung TV margins are pretty razor thin, to use another razor phrase. there's actually a company in the US called Telly. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but they will give you a free TV on the proviso that it's your main television that you use in the house and that you give them access to your user data and also get given ads. So that is taking
is
that
it
to...
Like big sizes? Can I get like a huge TV?
I'll put in a good word for you, Bucky. Yeah, no problem at all.
Bucky wants a large one.
But yeah, this kind of model isn't new. This exists, right? So printers, they operate on the same thing. Printers are really cheap. The ink is really expensive.
Get out of my bag. I'm a B2B. I was waiting to talk about this. Oh, I've been working on Xerox for like 7 years, and now this is my time to shine on it. And
well, I tell you what, I'll let you take over from there.
No, that's why you got it. Carry on.
Okay, so yeah, printers, similar thing. Games, consoles, same. E-readers are all the same, right? So the actual hardware is cheaper, and it's the supplementary things that make it more expensive. So it's a well-trodden model. It's no surprise that it's come into the CTV world. And given that the sort of the scale and the growth and the real opportunity there is in CTV, I'm not surprised.
Very good. I must apologise. I've made a media boo-boo. Roku. Roku.
Yeah.
So Roku, for all those Roku employees that are hating on me.
quick question for you guys on this. So the CTV world is growing massively, right? But there is a fragmentation in there. So you've got Samsung TV, you've got LG, you've got Roku, you've got Quest, you've got Pluto. There's so many different kinds of things. From our perspective as show heroes, what we do is we aggregate across all of those, right? That's where we kind of make a difference, among other things. But as planners and buyers, how do you look at that CTV environment? Do you see it as this, like, oh, okay, we'll put money into CTV, or do you divvy it up? How do you guys look at that?
I would firstly like to say that was so smooth.
I was going to say, what a show heroes plug. We've got about 15 news articles to get through, Charlie, so if you want to make this the main topic, we can talk about this forever.
Weirdly enough, we are going to come to talk about media fragmentation and the CTV landscape and all of that sort of thing in greater detail later on.
Let's move on to the second news article. In the world of AI. Oh no, the media folk are out of jobs again. So cloud-based CRM platform Salesforce reveals its new Gen AI feature, Agent Force.
Wow.
The feature can apparently fulfill various roles by automating aspects of marketing campaigns. And it could potentially enable scalability, of course, through automation. But the question I put to you is Agent Force a threat to agencies, or is it simply another tool to offer informative insights for better media planning? Jack, I'm going to pass that question to you.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's probably going to have more of an impact on people who work in media sales, right? It's going to be the people who work at actual media owners who are potentially going to see their jobs replaced by Agent Force. Or is it supposed to be a sort of a media agency side?
I think agencies can use it, yeah.
I'm unsure, because I feel like Salesforce is ordinarily held at the client side. It's their CRM, their own data. So in my opinion, my experience, I would say that it does pose, or it could pose, a bit of a threat, agency side and media owner side, mainly because it would replace what is done by those people for the clients before it even gets to the agency. So I think there's a threat on both of those sides. However, I do believe that it can just be a tool. So it can automate a lot of those things that take a lot of our time. And I think that is the best use case for it. I don't think it's going to take our jobs.
Yeah.
I don't subscribe to that type of fear.
Well, also, I think it's like with all of the AI tools that are being implemented and all of the sort of the software development, there will be people who lose their jobs, but also there will be people who get a lot better at their jobs because they learn how to use it and implement it properly.
I think that is the thing, isn't it? AI won't take your job. AI will take the jobs of people who can't use AI.
Oh, I'm so very... I like that take.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's wait and see. I mean, I think it's one of those things that, yeah, I don't know, jury's out.
I do want to add one thing to this. So NVIDIA, obviously the company who has partnered with Salesforce on this, definitely be one to watch out for, because they have another program called ACE, which is they've been using to help people build real life, like, video game characters. Mm-hmm. So when you start taking this... Agent Force and combining it with ACE, because that is part of the deal. They've had to commit to using ACE as well and developing ACE. So now you're taking human-like kind of avatars and you're adding the actual intelligence, and not intelligence, but you're adding the job roles of, you know, marketers in some ways. So I would definitely keep an eye on it. I'm not worried, but keep an
eye. Is that going to try and replace, like, building actual inhuman contact relationships?
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's...
The use case they had was customer service, so you could have, like, a human person. So they were like, oh, if there's a product recall, for example, and you want to talk to someone because, you know, you're a bit mad, but it's actually still a pretty easy kind of fix, send it back, get your money back, get another one, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Then they're going to combine those two things. So just watch out.
I'm not worried about this.
Let's save our AI opinions for episode 3, because we've got loads more AI stuff to cover in that one. But in other news, the golden quarter, Q4, what can we expect from the UK retail big dogs this Christmas? Well, regurgitated slogans from 2 years ago, by the sounds of things, after John Lewis' former Christmas slogan, never knowingly undersold, was cut a few years ago. A Drum article reveals that it's making a comeback this Christmas. Anyone read this news story?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's something they can now back up with the price match, I think they're going, was it like 25 retailers they're price matching to? That's great. It's something that I think I saw something years ago that it was like a really well-recognised slogan that most people didn't actually know exactly what it meant because it's kind of weirdly phrased, but people knew it as their slogan. So bringing it back is like bringing back a distinctive brand asset that people are going to be like, oh, right, that sounds reassuring. And, you know, if you think about the kind of the fairly light touch, low attention way that most people consume most advertising, if it's something that people can easily remember, that's only going to be a good thing for John Lewis at Christmas.
I definitely agree with that one. And I was just kind of looking into it a little bit. And I think when John Lewis was trying to kind of compete with, you know, the rise of online and e-commerce and everything like that, they might have thrown the baby out with the bathwater and getting rid of the slogan. Like, it was there, as you say, such a huge brand asset. So to throw that out and then reverse that after 2 years, I feel like at least they were able to notice that that might have been a mistake and pivot. So I commend that move, to be honest.
Was it actually, though? Because never knowingly undersold, to me, is a bit...
Yeah, but you work in marketing and like you're not like everyone else. You've got
that
to think of Joe Public on the street. He's not overthinking what it means. He's just like, oh yeah, John Lewis.
Do you think Gareth from Milton Keynes thinks, oh, never knowingly undersold that John Lewis?
It's the emotion that it gives you, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's like you know, it's the kind of the mnemonic rhythm of the words after it's kind of put on there, or the visual thing of seeing it. It's like the cinch, like.
That was really good.
Very good, very good.
Thanks.
Well, do McDonald's now.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. You have to whistle it.
Oh.
Go on.
No, move
I'm
on.
Loving
dry,
it.
Dry lips.
God, ruined it with the I'm loving it. Okay, right, moving on. Don't smirk at me, Jack.
I'm not smirking at you. I'm just smiling at you nicely.
Beard movements, like, I'm silently judging you. In the food and beverage industry... Stop it, please. In the food and beverage industry, back in advertising's heyday, we saw the iconic rivalry between Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Interestingly, 2024 reports show that Dr. Pepper has now a larger market share than Pepsi in the US.
What's the worst that can happen?
Mate, he is the only doctor that I can get an appointment with.
Well, Senior VP from System One, System One is a creative testing and advertising effectiveness company, thinks Coca-Cola should fear the worst. So are we expecting to see the same in the UK with Dr. Pepper?
I think it depends if they... I've seen a lot of Dr. Pepper advertising recently, so they're clearly pushing it hard because they've realised that if they start getting an excess share of voice, their market share goes up. Because for every... I think, what is it? The benchmark is... For every 10% of excess share of voice, your market share goes up by 0.3% on average, give or take, depending on the category. So that, you know, if they keep trying to push that excess share of voice above and beyond competitors such as Fanta and Pepsi, like, you probably won't overtake Coke because they've got endless gold mines. But, you know, I think we should start to see them keep growing. It depends if they maintain it and they're consistent.
I think we're missing something here. It tastes awful.
Get out.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to make the main point. It's a superior drink. Dr. Pepper is iconic and right. It tastes delicious.
Okay, when this finishes...
You're going back to Charlie 2.0. You are relegated. I can't believe this.
Awful.
This is why we missed your birthday.
Well, we're all going to go out for an Orangina after this. Yeah. Charlie's going to go for a Dr. Pepper.
Because he has to learn the ways. That's crazy. Jesus. I mean, when I was kind of looking at this, I think, yeah, all of that kind of point in terms of like excess share of voice makes a lot of sense. But I think when you start looking at the way and the type of messaging Dr. Pepper has been putting out, they've always focused on this distinctiveness. They're not really... No one even considered them in the fight against Coke and Pepsi. No one literally thought that was a thing. But they really, really doubled down on their distinctiveness and that they weren't even a rival of them. Mm-hmm. And they've snuck up. I think it's a win for anyone who's been playing the long game. Any kind of like marketers who have said, nah, just trust me. We don't need the quick time sales. Trust me. And here you go. Toe-to-toe with Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah, I quite like that their ads have got the sort of, they're embracing the weird side of it. Because obviously, you know, Charlie, for people like that with no taste, think it's weird. So like, it's almost like a Marmite approach, but for the modern age.
It really changes how I feel about you, Charlie. I literally wrote down one of my favourite drinks.
And I trust Buki on the fizzy drinks vibe because she's told me before that she would, you know...
I'm a delicious drinks connoisseur.
Yes.
Yeah, well, hey, Charlie's over there with a can of dandelion and burdock.
Superior drink.
Well, on other topical food and beverage news, very recently the BBC reported that online adverts for junk food will not be allowed in 2025 under new government rules to make kids less fat. I'm not sure if that's the politically correct term to
say what they're trying to do.
Fats these days, but yeah, correct. That's what they're trying to do. So the ban will apply to adverts shown on TV before 9 p.m.
Yeah.
as of October of next year. And food that might be banned, and I had a chuckle to myself when I read this.
Oh my God, the list is ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, soft drinks, so there goes our Dr. Pepper. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Savoury snacks such as crisps, a British staple.
Oh my God.
Breakfast cereal.
Hang on, no, Bombay Mix is included in savoury snacks.
My dad will be so upset. He loves a Bombay Mix. This one I just loved. Morning goods. What's a morning good?
Excuse me? Who doesn't love a morning good?
Don't take my morning goods away from me.
It's now only morning bads.
And ready meals. So the UK government first began discussing the need to limit junk food in advertising back in the 1990s. So that really worked. But other countries are also considering a ban. So where are you guys on this topic?
So, look, this isn't news because in London we've not been able to do HFSS advertising on TfL properties for the past couple of years because basically... This kind of thing is some kind of... I mean, God, I'm going to sound like massively right-wing here, which I suppose I am in a way, but it's like a political football. It just scores points because, like, the pearl clutchers are like, oh, it's a good thing that they're stopping doing it because the advertising's evil. But the advertising is a weak force, ultimately. It only kind of nudges and influences. Now, if you break this... Like, there's so many... I could do like a whole episode on this, but like if you break it down, you're stopping the live TV ads before 9 o'clock. We know that kids don't watch much live TV now anyway. It's massively dominated by YouTube and various other sort of online things. And I know they're trying to bring those in as well. But all of that aside, what kids are going out and actually buying this stuff? It's the parents who are buying it. And I suppose you're trying to influence the parents buying the actual junk food and what have you. But the thing is, it doesn't take into account things like physical distribution. When you go into a supermarket, the shelves are still stacked with this stuff. If you go down your high street, you still walk past 17 chicken shops, 14 bookies, 2 McDonald's, 3 KFCs. You know,
I think you're right, mate. And I think you were towing down the right path there. It's an emotional decision, not a logical one.
Yeah.
And I think by the government's own admission, they did their own study and they said that this would only cut children's calorie intake by 0.3 calories per day per child, which is almost nothing, right? And moreover than that, we mentioned a few things there that are going to be excluded from this. But actually, other things that are going to be in that bracket are things like cheese or honey or pesto, right? So these are things that are objectively not part of this problem that are being affected by it. And... we're in a bit of an economic slump at the moment. Do we need to make it harder for ourselves? Really? Do we need to?
Honestly, it's that in a nutshell. And also, you've had it for years on the tube. KFC, McDonald's, the rest of them, they've still been advertising because they've been getting around it with their lawyers and portion size
exactly.
sort of thing. So
I think on this, before Jack really gets down
the
rabbit hole...
Yeah, I've got a blood vessel.
Yeah, I know, I can see it. I can see it pulsing. But I think what's going to... The main thing for us, I think, in our industry is what it means for in terms of our planning. And so, for example, take betting, another industry that has been heavily regulated in where and when it can advertise and all that kind of stuff. So we have a client, William Hill, who did the most amazing kind of branded entertainment podcast for the win. Mm-hmm. So he did an amazing branded content podcast. And what we were seeing is that if you are kind of forced out of regular advertising channels, create your own content. And so we're seeing a lot of brands move into gaming, for example, because they can either create like branded worlds that aren't necessarily an advert and they can still kind of reach these audiences that are being restricted to them, or create content around things that those audiences like. So I think we're kind of paving the way for these emerging channels and, you know, maybe even bringing some of the TV inflation that we're seeing down.
Yep. I think this is a way for the government to make the advertisers the bad guys.
They're always the bad guys.
Yeah, well, people don't trust advertisers, do they? So it's a really easy win for them.
They trust the government I actually read something on it, we're nearly on par.
Yeah.
Well, in trust, the yes. government and
Yeah, I read a really interesting survey. I think it was Endelman.
Yeah.
And so they do like a global distrust survey. Yeah. And this year's one, we are, media is basically on a par with governments.
Nice.
I think ultimately with this, they should be doing things such as investing in greater education and, you know, making, you know, perhaps like subsidising healthier foods so that people aren't turning to cheaper alternatives that are pumped full of trans fats and God knows what else.
Yeah, well, this is the Media Freak podcast, not the Putting the World to Right podcast.
Yeah, sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
So, I'm so mad about it.
Yes, well, anyway, that wraps up News Roundup. Remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss. Email us at info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod.gmail. Oh, no, it's not .gmail, it's at gmail. Don't send it to .gmail.
Follow us on Instagram and just have a go at us via DM.
Oh, yes.
Slide into our DMs.
Ooh. Yes, please do.
Naughty.
Well, anyway, moving on to our Freak of the Week. So every episode, one of us will talk about a campaign or an activation and will be tasked with justifying why it should be crowned the Freak of the Week. So this week, I think we have Jack with a Freak of the Week submission. And the thing I like about this one, and I hate to give it away before you've actually announced the thing, but it is very topical on what we've just discussed.
Yes.
So it fits very, very nicely. So go ahead, Jack, tell us the Freak of the Week. Please.
So I really like this piece of work because I can sort of just see the comms planning decisions in it. And they took a really sort of creative route rather than going down the most obvious and immediate route. So this week I am bringing in as my candidate for Freak of the Week, the Doritos Extra Flaming Hot Ashley Roberts sweat shaming campaign, which is like basically just a really, really smart way of taking an aspect of super spicy food and kind of bringing it to the forefront. So obviously it was Fashion Week recently. So as part of that, they basically borrowed all of the behaviours of high fashion brands. So they went for kind of big, very sort of like expensive looking photography on the side of billboards. They went for kind of outside back covers of magazines like Stylist. They went into those kinds of contexts that you usually associate with fashion. But the thing is, all of the models in those ads are kind of sweating profusely whilst eating Doritos Extra Flaming Hot. And it was sort of all capped off with this special build that they've done with so Ashley Roberts, who is one of the Pussycat Dolls, who got shamed for sweating on the red carpet, is on this billboard, and they have got like thousands of litres of water pouring down her face, literally like constantly. And it's really striking. And I think they could have really gone for an obvious route of just kind of, you know, oh, it's dead spicy, and having someone like got smoke coming out of their ears or something, and then just going through all the usual channels. But they didn't. They went for something different, and that's why I love it.
Charlie's looking at his phone, looking really, like, smug and like, ooh, yeah. So, go on. I want to hear what you've got to say about this one.
No, not at all. I was just enjoying Jack's very graphic description there. But more importantly than anything here is it actually spicy?
They are really spicy.
Okay, I'll find out.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have actually tried this and
but
then...
Maybe we should have done it with them on air, but, I mean, it's a bit gross.
Isn't okay, no, we're, no, wait, so, we're waiting for the brand deal.
What's it called? ASMR. Crunch.
No, they actually did. Sorry, I know we're going slightly off
Jesus
the topic.
Christ.
But what I wanted to say about Doritos is I actually really commend how bold they can be and how quickly they can turn things like this around. I think a lot of brands, that would have taken so long to get through approvals, it's no longer relevant by the time they managed to do it.
Yeah.
So love that from them. In terms of the ASMR, they actually already ran that campaign with a gaming one where they basically released Doritos Silent, and it meant that, you know, when you're eating Doritos and you're on your gaming headsets, you wouldn't crunch, and they had to basically AI enable some software that would reduce just the sound of a Doritos crunch and nothing else. Very cool.
That's amazing.
It was shortlisted for a Media Week award, that
yeah.
one.
Very, very cool stuff.
So shout out to PepsiCo for obviously doing the campaign, OMD and Good Relations, who are part of VCCP, for that. But I just think it was just some really smart planning and took a more noticeable route, and I'm all about the notice, not the reach.
So guys, do you think it deserves our Freak of the Week?
That's pretty freaky to me. Yeah,
I'm gonna say yes, also because they published research, and I am all for brands that add value. I think literally just yesterday I was running to an event and I got there sweating, and I remember thinking, it is crazy how we, when we sweat, we feel like we're the only people who have ever sweated, and it's the most disgusting thing that could ever have happened. Mm. And we sweat shame ourselves. But publishing that research, I think, really makes it a little bit more, blows it up a little bit. And I, yeah, definitely.
Purpose driven. Thank you, Doritos.
I mean, yeah, okay, it's a bit of purpose driven. I usually don't like that, but I think it's
so right wing.
It's a neat insight.
How are we friends?
I'm not right wing.
Okay, so thank you very much for that, Jack. Moving on, forgive me, Buki, for I have sinned. Tell us what's on Media and On this week.
Well, since the launch of our new Instagram, we had an influx of submissions. So continue to follow, like, subscribe, submit your media woes, whinges, wins. We want to hear it all, and we won't make fun of you on the interwebs. So
you filthy, filthy people.
No. So we had a couple here that I wanted to bring out. Number one, and this is probably something we've touched on in the past, and so we can probably do this a little bit quicker. Sure. I'm considering a career in media advertising. Any tips? Quick fire.
Oh.
Quick fire. Knowing what you now know.
I mean, where to begin?
Okay, you. Charlie?
So they're considering a career in media.
In media slash advertising.
Yeah, big questions are... How old are you? Which bit are you coming into? But let's say you're
no
on.
There's no T's and C's around it, Charlie. Just answer the question.
I'm not good with open-ended questions. I'm a very specific kind of man.
Harriet, do you have any tips and tricks?
First of all, you need to like media. That would be a good start.
Great start.
You need to know the landscape. You need to be interested in the channels.
You need to listen
to us. Do
you
like audio? Do you like, you know, display? You know, find your niche. Start looking at trade publications. I won't name them all. Start listening to this podcast, which sounds like you're already doing, so well done.
Great step. I think listen to adverts and try and work out what you think is good, and think about why you thought it was good. Why did it appeal to you? Why did it seize your attention? What adverts do you think are bad? And then also think about where you're consuming your media, and start looking at things like, well, it depends what area you want to go into, because obviously sales is very different from planning, for example, but start looking at things like behavioural economics and social science, and trying to understand people, because that's really what this job's about. It's about trying to understand people's behaviour and how you can influence
it. Sorry, he's like looking at you like, honey, no one's going to want to be in this industry with
Okay, fine. Make sure that you know where all the great lunch spots are in London, and you know, make sure that Buki's your friend.
I think realistically speaking is who do you know, do you like what they do, and do you want to join them? Because once you're in the game, then you can start thinking about where you want to go. But you've got to have a couple of years under your belt of grinding to then understand what it is. So if you want to get into media, find someone who's in media, speak to them, see if they can get you an interview.
Why don't you DM us?
DM us.
We operate across all spheres of media, so yeah, DM us.
And if things go well, you could end up in Virgin Radio recording a podcast.
There you go.
Okay, so this one is slightly more serious, guys. Ooh, okay. So everyone, serious faces.
Put on your serious hats.
And it was almost alarming, because there were two similar ones, but not exactly the same.
Okay.
The first one says, my boss keeps asking if I'm going to have kids one day.
Oof.
The second one says, my male CEO keeps asking if I will be having kids, children in the future, ... help! !
That's not something they can actually ask, is it?
No, that's pretty illegal. But I think I would say, if I do or if I don't is not important to my employership.
Absolutely.
Like, if I want to do it, I fucking will.
Oof.
And if I do it, you have to be there for me, not only legally, but also just as anyone in any position of any authority or respect, you have to be there for them. That we live in without going too deep into it, we live in an unjust world. Males don't have to deal with that, females do. Females are equally as important in the workforce. We need to be able to support those people. So the fact that question has to be asked is kind of insane.
You have redeemed yourself from the Dr. Pepper episode.
I think because the person said help at the end, so my help would be you need to go back to your boss and say, do you think that's an appropriate question to ask me?
The point is, like, they shouldn't be asking that question, and you don't have to feel like you should answer it. I think if you wanted to be less confrontational about it, because not everyone's as willing to immediately go to war like Harriet, I think you could just laugh it off and kind of go,
laugh it off.
I don't know.
Great to HR.
And just kind of, if you really wanted to, you could speak to HR. But to be honest with you, I think you're better off just trying to bob and weave your way around it. It's not good, though, and you should make them feel uncomfortable for asking.
Yeah, I think if they're so out of touch that they're saying that, appealing to logic is probably not going to work.
Or you could ask them, are they planning on having any kids soon? Put the question back on them.
Well, that's what I suggested in the first instance and then got accused of trying to go to war with the person. So
is that what you said?
And on that note...
Classic man, he didn't even listen.
Well, along those lines. Anyway, Harriet, thank you very much for that, Bookie, as always. That wraps up this week. Thanks so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you'd like listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe and tell all your friends and follow us on Instagram and follow us on all of the stuff. Keep your media and non-stories coming in. We'll be back in 2 weeks in potentially another location right at the heart of the media scene. Our huge thanks to News UK for hosting us this week.
Massive thank you.
I will treasure my warm buttocks on Chris Evans' chair. Please don't keep that in.
Stop sniffing his chair.
Please don't keep that in. I just got nervous because we're rounding up, and you know I go a bit weird when we round up.
We do.
Yeah. So thanks so much, and see you again next time. And the Media Freak podcast is a Gimme Sugar production.